You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. We're getting all sorts of snow here right now. I got to tell you, it's just beautiful. Well, okay, except for having to shovel all that snow anyway. But hey, look, the snow, it's great for making a snowman. Yeah, it's just got the perfect consistency. Just a little wet, sticks together really well. You know, it's hard to do better. We're looking at, I don't know, just over a foot, actually, of snow. It's really cool. Well, no pun intended there, but seriously, it is. It's just absolutely beautiful. If it were still light out, I'd be casting. It's perfect weather for it, nice and cold. So, you know, when you wear your protective gear, you're all set. You're not overheating or anything. That's why I do all my casting runs in the wintertime, because you should never be messing around with 750-degree lead, well, it's right around there, without sufficient protective gear. I've had the tinsel fairy come to visit me one time, and oh boy, I'll never forget that. Sprayed the whole front of me with hot, molten lead. Got all over my leather jacket. Got all over my welding gloves. That full face shield that I was wearing. Scared the you-know-what out of me, too, but guess what? I didn't get hurt. Never even touched my skin. Taught me a lesson, right then and there. You know, kind of like you get into a car accident and you're wearing your seatbelt like you're supposed to be doing, right? Well, think of that leather jacket, the welding gloves, the full face shield, all that stuff. Think of that as your seatbelt, but, well, for casting. Speaking of which, I've been doing a lot of work with that 200-grain mold for 45 ACP. Yeah, remember that SR45 I've been breaking in? Unfortunately, I haven't been playing with it too much recently because time's really been an issue over the last couple of months. I love that classic turret press. Don't get me wrong. I've talked about it. I think the world of it. But 120 rounds an hour, folks, it just can't compare. It simply cannot compare to the 350 an hour that a progressive press can give you. So, I decided to do something about that. Just got myself a dedicated 45 ACP press to help speed up the loading. This is Lee's Loadmaster. Yeah, the one that's gotten all the negative press. I want to find out if all those internet reports about, you know, how much it supposedly sucks are actually true. Hey, if it was a deal I just simply couldn't turn down, so I went for it. And here's what that means. I'm going to be going through those 200-grain 45 caliber bullets in a hurry. And that means, more casting time. Hey, folks, I actually like casting. You kidding? I get to make my own bullets and save a ton of money over, well, you know, just having to buy them and such. Believe me, that gets real expensive real quick. And speaking of bullets here, you know I like me some Lee 6-cavity molds. You've seen the videos. That's actually what I'm casting with. That's what you're watching me do this with. Well, that one that you are seeing me casting with, that's the 200-grainer 45 caliber. Well, recently that mold's developed a little nick in the fourth cavity, it turns out. And that is because on Lee 6-cavity molds, there is a 45-degree angle on the sprue plate. And over time, that'll gradually wear away just a bit off the top of that aluminum block. Well, aluminum mold block, that is. I'm talking about the mold block. What that means, effectively, is any bullets that drop out of that particular cavity, that's cavity number 4, by the way, the bullet's going to have a little spur on it. Now, this happened after about, 20,000 bullets, and it's only that one cavity. It doesn't happen with the other 5, so believe me, I am not upset at all about this. The big question, of course, does it actually matter? Fortunately, the answer is no, it doesn't. All you gotta do, and this is, in fact, what I do, is run my bullets through the 0.454-inch sizing die, and takes care of it. Bye-bye, little spur. Remember, most people do run their bullets through a sizing die anyway, so, you know, big whoop, whoop-de-doo. No big deal. I still use the heck out of that mold. Just, you know, a little tip, something to be aware of. I still buy Lee 6 cavity molds. I still recommend them. They're great. Now, since we're talking about casting, there is this big to-do about the last lead ore smelting plant here in the USA. I'm talking about the Herculaneum plant. Closed down recently. So, of course, some folks are running around basically screaming about how the sky is falling when it comes to ammunition. Now, I'm no fan of the antis, and we all know they would love to limit our Second Amendment rights, but in this case, it is a bit of a case of Chicken Little. It's not like that. It's not even close, as it turns out. Turns out that smelting plant, the Herculaneum plant, didn't even supply lead to bullet manufacturers in the first place. No, they never did. Their customers? The battery makers. You know, car batteries, the big lead acid batteries. That's who their lead went to. So where'd the bullet makers get their lead? Well, they got it from secondary sources like, you know, lead reclaimers, big recycling companies that do lead recovery, that sort of thing. These big lead recovery plants do it on a pretty massive scale. That's where Sierra gets theirs. They talked about this recently. Yeah, gosh, it makes what we casters do seem like, you know, well, dropping the old bucket. Literally, actually. Remember, we do melt this stuff, so it is a liquid. Ba-dum-bum. Hey, it was there. Now, that said, what about lead supplies for folks like us who do want to cast? Oh, that's easy. You know all those backstops on all those ranges throughout the good old United States of America? I'm sorry, America. Well, there's lead in them thar backstops, folks. Guess what? They have companies come in and, well, harvest all that lead. There are a few ranges who actually do the reclaiming themselves, and they resell all that range lead. I can tell you from experience, that's actually pretty good stuff to cast with. I have some of it. It's a lot like the lead wheel weight alloy that we used to be able to get for free. Gosh, those were the days. Yeah, I know. Sammy Hagar would be proud right about now, wouldn't he? After all, we're talking about his favorite subject, heavy metal, right? Yeah, Sammy. Yeah, that is good stuff, no question. But I think this is a little close to what we had in mind. Yeah, that's more like it. Yeah, I know the 45 ACP doesn't sound quite like that, but hey, it's still pretty darn cool. We're going to get into some gun politics here in the next section. We have breaking news from California about their concealed weapon permit law. And let's just say the antis ain't liking it one bit. This is a very interesting twist out there in the Golden State, so stay tuned, folks.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
We're back. Folks, I just told you we got some breaking news. Today is Thursday, February 13th, 2014. Well, looks like Thursday the 13th is our lucky day. Well, it sure is for one aspect of liberty out there in California. Law out there, is, at least regarding concealed handgun permits, is as follows. You can only get a permit if you can show, quote, a good and sufficient reason, close quote. Yep. That's what's called may issue, meaning that they may issue you a permit if they like you. But, you know, unless you're Rosie O'Donnell's bodyguards or some other really famous, rich, and or politically connected individual, you ain't getting a permit out in California. Uh-uh. Not gonna happen. Well, apparently, that didn't set too well with the Ninth Circuit Court. They just ruled that this good and sufficient reason provision is, get this, unconstitutional. I am in sheer amazement, folks. You know I'm a liberal. The Ninth Circuit has made plenty of rulings I agree with, especially when it comes to civil, quote-unquote, civil rights, or at least what's usually talked about when we mention the term civil rights. Well, this is the first time I can think of that I've ever heard the Ninth Circuit ruling on the civil right covered by the Second Amendment. Here's what they said. You gotta hear this.
One may apply for a license in California to carry a concealed weapon in the city or county in which he or she works or resides. To obtain such a license, the applicant must meet several requirements. For example, one must demonstrate, quote, good moral character, close quote, complete a specified training course, and establish, quote, good cause, close quote.
Folks, I remember reading those requirements before. They've been around for decades. Oh, by the way, this is just like Maryland's requirements. Remember, I'm from California, so I've been seeing this for years. Folks, are you aware what the phrase good moral character is generally code word speak for? Yeah, it's code speak for rich and white. That's what they used to say down in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, all throughout the South not so long ago. It wasn't that many years. White people were pretty much always judged good moral character when it came to, you know, concealed weapons permits and such like that. Guess who wasn't? Yeah, that's right. Them brown folks. So whenever I see this good moral character business in the law like that, Jim Crow is the first thing that comes to my mind. Yes, it does, folks. You want to debate that? Well, I have an 81-year-old father who will shut you down fast because he saw it. He lived it. He actually lived it. That's what quote-unquote good moral character has traditionally meant, folks. Rich and white. Well, now, that's also been extended to big media stars generally. You know, now that Oprah Winfrey, a black woman, has so much money. Slight progress, which is good. You know, all progress is good. But how about really doing it right and just saying, no felonies? Why not just write the law that way? I don't know. I guess that makes too much sense or something. I hear that isn't allowed in government. Well, the judge has also noted that, and I quote,
concern for one's personal safety alone is not considered good cause.
Yeah, did you get that? Concern for your own personal safety by itself is not considered good cause out there in California. Well, the Ninth Circuit Court actually pointed that craziness out. Well, it's about time. This, by the way, did factor into their decision. So, yeah, it does matter and it is important. What California is saying here is that you've got to have a restraining order, a letter from law enforcement or the district attorney. Folks, the killer's not going to stop and wait for you to get a letter from mommy and daddy, in this case, the cops or the DA, before killing you. Seriously. You really think the killer's going to wait for you to get that restraining order?
Yeah, sure, you're right. I'll come back later. I see it's a bad time for you.
You really think so? I sure hope not, because I got news for you. That killer sure doesn't either. That killer's busting through your window, breaking down your door. You ain't got time to deliberate and contemplate and have, you know, little discussions in a law enforcement committee. You need that gun right now. Right now. Not 5 minutes from now. Think about it. What if my dad had to wait 5 minutes while those killers advanced on him? What would have happened to 12-year-old Kendra St. Clair not too long ago, I think it was last year, if she hadn't gone and gotten her mom's gun and defended herself? You know, when that bad guy busted in through her front door. What do you think would have happened to that girl? Yeah, I thought so. And apparently, the Ninth Circuit Court saw it the same way. Finally. Here's what they said. And I quote,
we are well aware that, in the judgment of many governments, The safest sort of firearm-carrying regime is one that restricts the privilege to law enforcement with only narrow exceptions.
By the way, I got to point out here that they did say privilege. The court actually said privilege. No, the Second Amendment is not a privilege, folks. It's a right. But let's continue. You know, they quote the Supreme Court here, and they do apply to themselves. Continuing. Quote.
Nonetheless, the enshrinement of constitutional rights necessarily takes certain policy choices off the table. Undoubtedly, some think that the Second Amendment is outmoded in a society where our standing army is the pride of our nation, where well-trained police forces provide personal security, and where gun violence is a serious problem. That is perhaps debatable, but what is not debatable is that it is not the role of this court,
meaning the Supreme Court,
or ours, to pronounce the Second Amendment extinct. Nor may we relegate the bearing of arms to a second-class right, subject to an entirely different body of rules than the other Bill of Rights guarantees that we have held to be incorporated into the Due Process Clause. The District Court erred in denying the applicant's motion for summary judgment on the Second Amendment claim because San Diego County's good cause permitting requirement impermissibly infringes on the Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Reversed and remanded.
Close quote. Did you catch that part about how enshrinement of constitutional rights necessarily takes certain policy choices off the table, folks? Yeah, it does. Of course it does. 13th and 14th Amendments, the big ones after the Civil War, maybe you've heard of them. Yeah, those two right there took a whole lot of policy choices off the table, too. You know, like slavery. You can't do it. Didn't take Jim Crow off the table, unfortunately. Well, until the Supreme Court smacked that down with Brown versus the Board of Education, thank goodness. And the fact that we have a press corps, you know, the mainstream media, some call it the lamestream media. Well, whatever you call it, guess what? It's legal. You can't keep people from having and using printing presses, folks, because the First Amendment says you can't. That policy choice is off the table. And finally, the Ninth Circuit recognizes that for the Second Amendment, too. Mr. Alan Gura, attorney at law. We're in your debt again. And now, I'm just relishing this thought right now. Seriously, I gotta wonder what these anti-constitutionalists like, you know, Leland Yee and Kevin DeLeon out in California, I gotta wonder what they're thinking right about now. Oh, this is just delicious. I would love to be a fly on the wall during those discussions. Whooey! But guess what? We are not yet out of the woods yet, folks. Seriously, we're not. There's still the possibility of appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Why might that happen? Well, gosh, you know, the court spoke pretty definitively, right? You know, the court has spoken and all. What about that? Well, there's a little issue. Turns out we have different rulings on this very subject from different circuit courts. Yeah. The Ninth Circuit ruling happens to agree with the Seventh Circuit. But guess what? It happens to disagree with the Second, Third, and Fourth Circuits. Whoops. Which one's right? Which one's the law of the land? And that matters, folks. It isn't just California. These are circuit courts, folks. Circuit courts. They make rulings that affect multiple states in this country. Oh yeah, things just got a lot more interesting now, didn't they? Oh, also bear in mind, this was a 3-judge panel, not the full Ninth Circuit Court. But it still currently carries that force of law, though. Let's see what happens now. Tell you what I hope for. I sincerely and strongly hope that the end result of all this is that the right of Californians and other places like that to keep and bear arms, just like the Constitution says, will finally be respected. It'll have been long overdue, that's for sure.
Be right back after a quick station ID break. See you in a moment.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
To quote General Douglas MacArthur, we have returned, folks. Few more things I found out about recently. Yeah, one of them's from some folks over on the Liberal Gun Club forums. This one that you're about to hear about is called An Example of Unintended Consequences. Happened just last week up in Buffalo, New York. Turns out, there was a man with a gun call to the Buffalo Police Department. Oh, not just that, but in an elementary school. Huh. Reminders of Sandy Hook, anyone? Yeah. Like you might imagine, the school went into lockdown post-haste. SWAT team shows up. All that. Swarming with cops. So who had the gun? Turns out it was a parent volunteer. Oh, and not just that. This particular parent volunteer lobbied hard for New York State's new Unsafe Act, as I call it. This is that one that, well, among a lot of other things, limits magazine size to 7 rounds. This guy, the guy who got caught with the gun in the school, turns out he lobbied for the New York Unsafe Act really hard. He routinely volunteers at this school for its after-school programs and the child mentoring programs. Now, hey, I'm all for volunteering in schools. Guess what? He heard man with a gun in the school. First thing he did, he gathered up all the 50 kids with him into the cafeteria, closed the doors. You know, trying to keep them safe, right? Well, I guess that's the procedure during a lockdown like this. Okay, fine. He's taking care of the kids as best he thinks he can. Sure. Good. So, what in the name of the flying spaghetti monster was he doing carrying a gun into the school himself? Oh, and right after he lobbied so hard to make it harder for law-abiders to even get guns, what's up with that? Yeah, folks, you heard right. He was the man with a gun. The guy who lobbied for gun restrictions was the man with a gun. Can we say, irony of epic proportions? Good. I knew we could. Dude apparently not only operates a printing business, but he's also a security guard who has a permit to carry that piece of his. He's not a school employee, so let's just get that out of the way. But it wouldn't matter even if he were. The law does not make allowances for school employees other than cops. Actual sworn police officers. Oh, here's more. Yeah, this gets even better. Listen to this. Just last year, he was lobbying for a state law there in New York that would make possessing a gun on school property a felony. Now, wait a minute. You're thinking, well, isn't it already a felony? Well, turns out before in New York State, that was a misdemeanor under state law. Now, I think the Federal Gun-Free School Zones Act of 1995 makes it a felony anyway, so state law wouldn't have mattered. Nope. Wouldn't have mattered. This state law push was just yet another feel-good thing so politicians could campaign on it later. See, we're for the children! Well, how ironic that he is himself now charged under that very same state law that he asked for, and by the way, which passed, for 2 counts of criminal possession of a firearm. Folks, he's looking at 4 years in the state pen for this. Like I said, talk about a case of unintended consequences. You know, I have to wonder how this guy feels about that law right about now. Yeah, now that he's facing prison time under it. What Arsenio Hall used to say, something to make you go, Oh, and his anti-Second Amendment friends, oh, they're now jumping behind him, and they're all saying, oh, it was just an honest mistake, unfortunate mistake, it was a mental lapse, these things happen. You know, all the excuses. Oh, really? So it's just an honest mistake when it's one of their number. But if it's not someone in their little club, hang him from the highest tree for the children. Yeah. Let's get one other thing clear here, and this is really why I'm telling you about this. Folks, I am not happy about this man's arrest. I really do believe he intended no harm. The guy is a known community volunteer, and apparently he's done a whole lot of good for a whole lot of disadvantaged kids. This really is an unfortunate incident, and it brings no joy whatsoever to my heart. None. Zip. Folks, how could it? A good man here is facing two felonies and prison time for what I think really was an honest mental lapse. Really. Unfortunately, the aunties like New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, they don't allow for such honest mistakes. Oh, no, 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 no. Well, at least not unless it's for members of their own highbrow elite clubs, or their bodyguards, also known as the state police and the NYPD. Except for those extra privileged folks, good men like this one, Mr. Dwayne Ferguson, that's his name, are going to jail. Dwayne Ferguson is going to jail. Now tell me, folks, just what good was done here? What good was done here by either the federal Gun-Free School Zones Act or this new state law in New York making firearms carry into a state felony? Really, I want to know, what good was done here? What good is going to be done by throwing this good man in prison? If you have an answer to that question, would you email me? My email address is cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Seriously, I want to know. If you have an answer, I really would like to read it. Because at this point, I would say what happened to him and such laws generally are a terrible miscarriage of justice. We couldn't have a better example of that fact than the case of Mr. Dwayne Ferguson, the man you just heard about. This is the danger of laws like the ridiculous Gun-Free School Zones Act. And it's true not just at the federal level, but also at the state level, folks. These laws don't do a bit of good. And as you just heard, they can do a whole lot of bad. We need to get these crazy laws repealed and off the books once and for all. Hey, we did it with Jim Crow, so don't tell me we can't do it. We've done it already. It'll take time, but we can do it with this too. We'll be back. Stick around.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
I'm sure you've heard of a little TV show called, Star Trek. You know, Gene Roddenberry's a worldwide famous TV show. Yeah, that. The one with Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, Dr. McCoy, Lieutenant Uhura, Mr. Chekhov, and of course, Mr. Sulu. Mr. Sulu was, of course, portrayed by George, Takei. He still does the Sulu role here and there for some of the later tribute shows made by some of the Trekkie fans. They're really good, too. You ought to watch them. Of course I'm a Trekkie. I'm a GNU Linux advocate and total geek. You expect otherwise? I've been since I was 4 years old. Loved Star Trek from the first time I watched it in San Francisco back in the early 70s. Thank goodness it was already on reruns, syndicated by then. Well, turns out, Mr. George, Takei isn't just one of the good old Star Trek actors with that rich, deep voice he's had for the last, 20 or so years, maybe longer. Mr. Takei is also a bit of a social activist. He's got a Facebook page. The thing's freaking hilarious. I mean, dry sense of humor to where you're just, like, gut laughing. Of course, he also puts a little social activism in there, you know, here and there, not all the time, but here and there, enough to get your attention. And turns out, as you might be suspecting I'm hinting at, he is yet more than that. I didn't know about this. He also experienced something called the Japanese internment of World War II. Yeah, he actually lived it as a kid. Why would I bring this up on a podcast about guns? Well, two reasons. The first is, we're not just the Liberals' gun corner. We're also the Liberals' gun corner. And any affront to liberty is something we need to look at. I know it's old and musty. I know a lot of you thinking that, why are you bringing this up again, Cowboy T? You're about to find out. That points to the second reason. The second reason is to address a point that the antis like to make a whole lot. You know how they're always saying something like, well, only the police and the military need guns. Ordinary citizens don't need guns. I know I've heard that a whole lot myself. As a matter of fact, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard, and this is just me hearing, some auntie say that, I could buy a decent used car. You know, nice little, you know, slightly older model Toyota or Honda or Nissan Econobox. You know the little four bangers that get over 30 miles a gallon? Oh, heck, maybe even an early 2000s Volkswagen Jetta diesel that gets nearly 50 miles a gallon. Yeah, I could actually buy such a car. I've heard it that often. And when you point out to them that if only the authoritas have the guns, that's called a police state, like, you know, Red China or North Korea, here's what they do when you do that, when you point that out to them. They dismiss and poo-poo you and say, oh, your tinfoil hat's a little too tight there. That could never happen here. This is America. The Constitution will protect us. The police will protect us from harm. Oh? Really? You sure about that? Well, Mr. Takei tells a very different story. This is what happens here in the United States when the police are the only ones with the guns.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Los Angeles until Pearl Harbor. And then, as I think you know, Japanese Americans on the West Coast were summarily rounded up and sent into 10 barbed wire internment camps. I was 4 at the time of Pearl Harbor, and I was too young to really understand what was going on. But I still do remember that day when armed soldiers with guns, bayonets on them, came to our home to order us out. I remember that as a very scary day. And, you know, a child can sense your parents' anxieties. And we were taken from our home to a horse stable in Santa Anita Racetrack, where we were housed for a few months while the camps were being built. And when the camp was built, we were put on a train and taken all the way across the southwestern desert to the swamps of Arkansas, a camp called Rower. And I grew up there for a portion of the war. And then we were transferred from that camp to another camp in Northern California called Tule Lake, which was an even more harsh camp. There were three levels of barbed wire fence and tanks patrolling the perimeter. And after the war, we came back home to Los Angeles.
Now, why were you transferred from Camp Rohrer to Camp Tule Lake?
Yes, there's a dark chapter of American history in that. Immigrants coming to the United States could all aspire to someday becoming naturalized American citizens, except one group of immigrants from Asia. And so for all rights and purposes at that time, it was excluding Chinese and Japanese immigrants to the United States. They could not be naturalized. When the war broke out, young Japanese American men and women rushed to their local recruitment boards to volunteer to serve in the U.S. Army. But because we looked like the enemy, and simply for that, we were rejected from service. Those that volunteered to serve were classified as 4C, which means enemy non-alien. Now that's a very peculiar term, non-alien. It means a citizen. we couldn't even be called enemy citizens. We were called enemy non-aliens, and they were rejected from service. And we were all incarcerated. But a year into internment, the government realized they had a manpower shortage, and here was all this manpower that we've incarcerated under the label of being potential spies, saboteurs, traitors. How do we tap this manpower? So they came down with what was called a loyalty questionnaire, which in its on the surface sounds outrageous. After they've taken our property, our homes, our businesses, our freedom, and incarcerated us for a year, they want to test our loyalty. It was a series of about 40 questions, and everyone in these internment camps had to respond, everyone over 17 years of age had to respond to this, answer the questions in the loyalty questionnaire. A 17-year-old girl or an 80-year-old immigrant lady all had to respond to this questionnaire. There were two key questions that the government wanted answers to. Question 27 asked, "Will you bear arms to defend the United States of America?" Can you imagine this question being posed to an 88-year-old immigrant lady or a 17-year-old girl? Question 28, and this was only one sentence, but it had two ideas. It asked, "Will you swear your loyalty to the United States of America and forswear your loyalty to the Emperor of Japan?" Now, for a Japanese American, someone born and raised here, the word "forswear your loyalty to the Emperor" was very offensive, because it assumed that by birth you were ingrained with an inborn loyalty to the Emperor. I mean, you know, you can't forswear something that doesn't exist. So that the government assumed that there was an existing loyalty just because we looked like this. And so if you answered no, meaning I don't have a loyalty to the Emperor to forswear, you were also saying no to the first part. Will you swear your loyalty to the United States? If you answered yes, meaning yes, I will be loyal, you were, fessing up that you had been loyal to the Emperor, and the government had was justified in putting you in an internment camp. It was it turned all 10 camps into turmoil. My father, as I said, was born in Japan and ineligible for citizenship by government, you know, decree. He said, "Gall," to ask me this after they've taken my property, my home, everything. They've taken everything, but there's one thing that they can't take, and that's my dignity. I am not going to grovel before this government. And he answered no to those two questions. And my mother, I mean, you know, she's a young mother with three young children, one a baby. You know, they expect her to go off and carry a gun and fight? No. She said, "This is nonsense. I'm not going to subject myself to it." And she also answered no to those two key questions. And because of that, we were removed from the camp in Arkansas to the camp in Northern California. And that's why they had three layers of barbed wire fence. We were disloyal.
Oh my, indeed. Folks, he's right. This is one of those very dark chapters of our history, just like he said. Matter of fact, it continues to the present day, more modern times. Guy I used to know, is a Vietnamese-American guy. He put it this way. "You got slant eyes, man. Cops gonna arrest your behind." Yeah, nearly happened to him, too, just for being in the wrong, the quote-unquote wrong neighborhood. And I think we all know what the quote-unquote wrong neighborhood means. And by the way, he was there on legitimate business. County business, no less. Uh-huh. I'm sure you've already figured out what must have happened. Yes, some scared white woman sees him through her window and calls the cops just for seeing this East Asian dude in her neighbor's driveway, and he was just doing his work. I happen to know what that business was, too, because guess what? He and I were co-workers at the time, and I myself saw the service call come in, so I know for a fact that he was there legitimately. He's a county employee, folks. He was there on a call from one of the residents in that neighborhood. Oh yeah, he was upset afterwards. Damn right he was, and I don't blame him either. We still view East Asians as slant eyes, even now in the 21st century? This wasn't very long ago. It was only a few years ago, folks. Come on, people. This points to something important, folks. That's why I brought this up. There's always the potential for folks who don't look like you to get labeled the other. You know, not like us. We've seen it with black Americans for centuries over here. Same with the Native Americans. We saw it with the Chinese immigrants during the railroad days. We saw it again during World War II with people like George Takei, who, by the way, was born here in the United States, not Japan. Yeah, American citizens were done up like that. Now, here's how it relates to the liberals' gun corner. Imagine if the Japanese Americans had all had guns. Imagine if they banded together and resisted that forced internment. And don't think it couldn't happen either, because that's exactly what the Korean-American shop owners did during the riots of 1991, the Rodney King riots. They banded together and stood up on top of their roofs and making sure that the looters didn't mess with them. So don't say this can't happen. Just think about that being applied to the Japanese-Americans in the 1940s for a moment. Would there have been a firefight? Yeah, probably. But here's the thing. The authorities of that day, well, they would have had to think twice. They'd have to think, well, do we really want to risk our own good white boys' lives to violate the Constitution like this? Ultimately, they still might have tried, yeah, sure. But they would have had to think about it. But here's the thing. Families like Mr. Takei's family, they didn't go shooting at the police. Even when their constitutional rights were being stomped on, they didn't go shooting at the police. They couldn't even believe that their own government, the American government, would do this in the first place to its own citizens. That's just like what a lot of aunties say today. This is America. That could never happen here. Oh, yeah? Might want to think again. This is what can happen to you when you're the suspect population, the so-called disloyal, even when you didn't do anything wrong. And that, folks, is what the Second Amendment is all about. It's the ability to defend yourself from that kind of tyranny. And that's why I keep talking about it here on the Liberals' Gun Corner. Folks, this does matter. Mr. Takei just told you why. The key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, then you're at the mercy of the ones who would put you away. And the tools for that are guns. This is Cowboy T signing off. Till next time. Till then, safe shooting. Practice often. Stay warm if you're covered by the snow. And as always, thanks for listening. It's good to be back.